Hi, Art Supply Posse. I am delighted to bring you today's guest, Nikki Trakos. Nikki first joined the Posse back in episode 173, where she spoke about her love of watercolour, as well as, of course, her latest book that was published. Well, it's still her latest book, actually, I think, anyway, unless I've missed, and it's quite possible, right? Watercolour Made Simple. Like all the guests who join me here, I really enjoy following Nikki on Instagram. It allows me to see where she is at any given moment in her art life. When I saw Nikki begin to shift towards exploring watercolour portraits, I knew I had to get her back in to join us here in the Posse. There is so much to discuss, and I'm just so looking forward to it. Hi, Nikki. Thank you for joining me today.
Hi, Kim. I'm so happy to be back. I loved our last conversation.
Oh, I'm so glad. So let's do the thing we should do. In case listeners today haven't actually heard your episode, or maybe they just don't know you at all, could you just share a little bit about who is Nikki Trakos, the artist?
Sure. Well, I live just north of Toronto in Canada, and I have been an artist, I would say, my whole life, but really professionally for about 12 years now. And I feel like over the years, the mediums have changed, but watercolor seems to be the one that's been hanging around the most. Our love affair is becoming deeper each day. I love the qualities of watercolor. I think it's very versatile. I know a lot of people maybe are intimidated by watercolor, but through the last few years and with COVID especially, I've been teaching online classes. So that's something I really love. I am, like you mentioned, have a book that just came out, and we're actually coming up to the 1 year anniversary. I can't believe it.
Really? Yeah. How? No.
I know. We're in summer right now, and these last few months just flew past.
Gosh, it's incredible.
I didn't make as much art as I thought I was going to, but that's okay.
It is, yeah. It's funny you mention about watercolor being intimidating, because I still find myself thinking that way. Like if I say to myself, you know, let's say today I'm recording, it's Saturday for me, it's Friday night for Nikki, just for the sake of the listeners. So when I wake up, I might say to myself, okay, today I want to do art of some sort, okay? And my first thought is never watercolor, even though I love it. And when I get into the zone of playing with it, I adore it, but I still have that sort of inherent fear is probably too strong a word, but I think maybe I'm just not yet confident enough.
Would acrylics be what you would pick up?
Yes.
And normally paint with, Kim?
Yep, definitely. Yeah, definitely. But I want to do more watercolor. It's just that thing of, oh, I'm not yet confident enough, so I'll wait till I am, which is so silly because I'm never going to get confident if I don't practice.
Right. Well, and the reason why I'm asking, because there are different approaches with each medium. And the one thing with watercolor that might be where the apprehension is for most is that you can't go over it. It's if you make a mistake, I mean, you can. There are tricks, and I teach all those. But it's less forgiving. So there's less room for error. So if you don't lean into allowing the medium to just settle and be where it needs, or if you're not as versed with how to maybe correct something that didn't go quite as planned, then I could see where that intimidation is. And especially if you want to just sit down and have a really free-flowing art session, I can see that. I can see that apprehension for sure. And I think it's very common. And it's funny that you mentioned that because I sit down. So I love all mediums. I paint in acrylic and oils, and I love charcoal. And the one thing I will say is if I only have 20 minutes to create, I'll sit down with watercolor brushes because I'm kind of lazy. I can just, you know, throw some paint on paper, paint something, but I don't have to wash up, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
I can just kind of swirl the brushes in the water, put them down, walk away, and I'm done. So there isn't a big time commitment for cleanup. So that's what I love about watercolor too.
It's funny, isn't it, how we put these things, like, and now I'm just realizing this conversation is stepping away from portraiture, but we will get back to it.
But we'll get there.
It's funny because I think a lot of us, when we're comfortable with a particular medium, whatever it is, we just, without even thinking, it's just, well, I'll use this medium because I know about it. I know what works, what doesn't work, what works for me, particularly because, of course, one of the beautiful things about art is we all approach the same medium in a completely different way in some regards. And it's so easy to just fall into that. Well, I have, and especially if you are short on time, which a lot of us are, you just think, well, I have only 20 minutes. So I'm going to keep with that thing that I know that I can get a result from in 20 minutes that I might actually be happy with. Yet maybe we do need to, maybe this is our call to action. I don't like that. No, that's not the right term. But maybe this is our way of giving ourselves permission to, okay, you still might only have 20 minutes, but pick up that medium that makes you uncomfortable and see what happens.
And make it simple. And I feel like that's become part of the brand of, you know, my approach and my philosophy around art is just keep it simple. So if watercolor is something that intimidates you, maybe pick a simple motif that you want to paint, limit yourself to just a few colors, and allow yourself to have that play and that interaction with the medium and allow it to express itself. Because I think with watercolor, the more you let it move and settle on its own, the more beautiful the end result can be. I know many people talk about, you know, not liking blooms or the cauliflower effect. I love when watercolor does that, and there's different ways you can control how much blooming you get and things like that. But if you just kind of allow it to move and to flow, and then once dried, it even changes, I think that can be really beautiful. So just keeping it simple. And maybe I'll use that advice tomorrow when I sit down with some acrylic paint. I'll just pick up. I'll take my own advice. I'll just make it simple.
Look out, guys. I'm doing things to Nikki. Encouraging you to get out of your comfort zone.
Exactly. And that's the thing, right? We want to be in control, and we want it, you know, to be successful. And yeah, so I like that. I'll get out of my comfort zone, and I'll let you know how it goes too.
Awesome. Okay, so portraiture in itself is one of those genres that has, it feels like it's existed forever in terms of art. It, you know, we as humans have always, it feels like, wanted to record our fellow selves, whether it's other people or self-portraits of ourselves. But yet when I consider watercolor and portraiture, it feels like it's not new. I know it's not new. I've seen examples of it, you know, that are far from new, that have, you know, existed for decades longer. But it does feel like, and I guess maybe I'm thinking of it in terms of that magic you were saying about watercolor doing its own thing. But it kind of feels like, how do you make it work, watercolor and portraiture? I suppose what I should step back first and ask is, what made you interested in wanting to work with portraits? Because it is a whole nother thing. It's a whole nother world. You're representing the human form on, you know, paper or whatever medium, whatever surface you're using. So why did you decide to explore that?
I think there's always been a part of me that has tried to express portraits over the years. I remember years ago drawing portraits for friends as, you know, wedding gifts or birthday gifts, and not being good. Like I would probably cringe if I saw the portraits that I gave them, as we do when we see old art that we've made. Mm-hmm. But I think I've always been drawn. So I love people, and I studied anthropology and sociology in university. And I think that we hold such personal history and character and emotions, and we all have a story. And I think that, so I love like portraits specifically, not necessarily figurative form, but I just think that there's so much expression in a gesture, in a pose, in an expression in the face. And if I can capture a little bit of that essence through recreating it in my art, and not even doing it so that it's hyper-realistic, doing it so that it is more painterly or artistic and I can add a bit of my flair, then I think that's really special, because then I get to capture a bit of personal history as well, not only in the reflection of the portrait, but also in the moment that I painted it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So I think you sort of touched on a question I was going to get to. You're not after hyperrealism here. Like, is it even possible with watercolor? Could you create something like super realistic with watercolor?
Oh, 100%. And I think it's, you know, being really practiced in working in values. So when I am sitting to sketch with either pencil or charcoal, which are two mediums that I love to use in portraiture, I, depending on how much time I have and what my goal is for that session, I have created drawings that are hyper-realistic. And they were practices for me so that I can work on where to place features, how to add values, and training my eye to see things. And I think that's very important, because the thing with portraiture is if you're drawing a flower, you can kind of fiddle with where the petals go or what direction they lie or how they overlap, and it'll still look like that specific flower that you're emulating. With portraiture, unless you're getting really stylized and a little bit more expressive, working on balancing facial features and making it look recognizable and realistic, I think takes a lot of practice. Technique for sure, like having the proper way to approach it, but the practice is where it's at. With watercolor, again, because the medium isn't as forgiving, it's about building up layers, maybe some underglazing, and really working on value. So I've seen some really beautiful portraits done in watercolor, but it is a process. You can get there. It takes time, but it is totally possible.
Could you tackle portraiture, like not you as such, but like a listener, if this is something they would like to try, can it be done if you've never actually done portraiture in any shape, way, shape or form? Like if you've never even practiced or had a go at drawing somebody with a, you know, with a graphite pencil, could you still make it work with watercolor? Like is that doable, or does someone need to have some kind of experience first?
Yeah, so I actually had just produced a new course. It's Portraits Made Simple. Mm-hmm. And I teach like how to map a face, how to draw each feature individually, and then, you know, how to put it all together. And drawing, when it comes to portraiture, I believe is probably the best introduction to being able to recreate a portrait or paint a portrait. And then adding in color and value becomes almost secondary, or even a completely different course, although I've combined them together. But working on then knowing where to add color, knowing where to add shadows and highlights and things like that, I would say, you know, is equally as important, but they almost should be looked at in two parts. So when I started working on portraits, I really focused in on taking classes, whether they were online or in person, to learn how to form the features of a face, where to place them, how to rearrange them if, you know, the head was posed differently, or if the lighting was, you know, hitting the face differently. And then I would start adding color and using watercolor. So I would say yes, it is definitely possible, but I think that in order to feel successful through the process, I would recommend starting with learning how to sketch out, even if it's just a simple sketch that you start with, and then add watercolor too.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Well, it does, yeah. I guess it's learning how to see a face, which probably, as I say that out loud, sounds ridiculous. But when I say see, I mean see to be able to then put it onto the page, because that's a whole different thing, like learning how to, I guess, break down a face into parts, you know, like instead of trying to tackle the whole, because there are shapes that are consistent, you know, and if you can work those out and learn how to see those, then I'm sure that makes that process somewhat easier.
And even from, you know, the perspective of approaches, I've learned so many different methods, and there really are mathematical, you can break down the face in a very symmetrical mathematical way. And it almost always works out, unless you have someone whose eyes are spaced really far apart, or maybe has a really long chin, you know, and then you adapt it. But there really are specific formulas and a very, I would say, strict approach to how you can measure out and lay down the features of the face and the head and everything. And I've learned how to do that over the years. It's not my favorite way to approach a portrait, because I like to have a bit of freedom. But for someone who wants to, again, create more of a realistic, you know, essence of the person that they're wanting to recreate, then something like the Loomis method, for instance, would be a really great way. And it's a consistent way of measuring where you put the eyes, where you place the nose, how far from the nose are the lips and chin, etc. Again, I don't believe that there's only one way to approach portraits. I believe that you have to find the way that suits your art style and your process. That was a little hard to get out, but basically, I'm a big advocate for find what works for you, and then repeat that again and again and again and again.
Yeah, it makes sense.
That's where the magic is.
Yeah, definitely. So we will talk about the good in a second, but I'm curious to know, what are some of the challenges that working with watercolor throws at you when you're creating a portrait? Because I imagine there are a few things that you sort of need to figure out with watercolor for portraiture that you may not necessarily come across, you know, if you were working with an acrylic or, you know, oil or whatever. Like what does watercolor give you in terms of its challenges?
I would say lightening skin tones. So as you're mixing skin tones, I may use three different watercolor paints to mix a specific skin tone. And then in order to lighten that mix, if it's too dark, I have to add water to it. So the transparency then becomes a bit of a challenge, because if I want to layer and create value and even volume in the face, I have to be really patient with letting the piece dry before I add the next layer. So I would say two major ones would be creating skin tone mixes that look realistic or flattering, so that it suits the subject, suits the portrait that you're creating, and also needing to be patient so that you can let layers dry. I would say those would be the two big ones.
Okay. So then what are our good things? What are the wonderful things that watercolor give us for portraiture?
So I really love expressive portraits where, again, they look artistic versus something that is really realistic. Mm-hmm. So allowing the paint to dry in puddles and even sort of in an inky kind of splattery form looks really cool with watercolor, especially when you're using colors that, again, like maybe you're using blues and yellows in the portrait, and colors that don't resemble skin tone. You can get really creative and have it be flowy and watery, but still keep aspects very realistic, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So I can do a detailed eye, but then have, you know, a really unique skin tone if there's maybe even a reflection of light across one side of the face, and then just letting watercolor dry as it may. Because when it dries, it'll leave circles and rings and things like that if you allow it. And that can look really cool and expressive in a portrait.
It's funny you say that, because I was actually going to ask you, are you using strictly like I was going to say real color, as in colors that are found in the human face, you know, human skin, or are you exploring and throwing in completely non-human colors? Because I like to do that sort of thing. I always find that's fun, like creating something that looks really good, even though it's using colors that should not be on a human skin, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, and I'm talking there, I'm talking wild and weird and wonderful, you know, really deep, dark colors, you know, like greens and blues and things, you know, the not human skin. But I find those are quite pleasing to look at and also fun to make. Like, so you're obviously doing a bit of both here.
Yeah. And again, you know, talking about when you sit down to create, what's the intention in that moment? And sometimes it's just to express. So sometimes it's just to see what comes out. And I'm even, as you're talking, I'm thinking about the portraiture class that I came out with. And we start with, you know, very specific, this is how you draw this and this is how you should approach this. But the very last module was actually my favorite module in the whole entire class, because I took out those, you know, wilder colors, and I made these ethereal versions of portraits that I just sat down with the intention of wanting to show what it's like to just be creative and have a playful aspect working with portraits. And they are my favorite portraits that I created for the class. And they're not realistic. They're just expressive, artistic, and playful. And again, when I think about portraits, I admire, especially when I'm out in galleries, museums, I beeline to any of the portraits, especially the big, massive oil paintings. And I admire when, you know, I'm enjoying these paintings and they look like the person will just reach out and touch you. Like, they are so realistic and they have such depth and they're so inviting. But I think we have photography in this day and age. Really, if we want to capture someone's essence, let's do that with photography. But as a painting, I want to see who the artist is within the painting, if that makes sense. I want to see a little bit of your personality mixed in with the personality of the person that you're representing.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It makes sense. It's in a way, you're seeing two people. Like, if it's done right, you're seeing the artist as well as the actual person that whose portrait is being created.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's exciting when it comes to representing, you know, the subject that you're inspired by, but then allowing yourself to then come in and be a part of their personality. And I think that's why I love portraits so much. And oftentimes when I work on portraits that I love, they're usually women. I think women are beautiful. And I think I love to celebrate strong women, and I love when I can portray emotion in a portrait. And oftentimes they're not smiling. It's almost like I'm getting whatever is coming out on paper is almost an emotion even that I'm feeling in the moment. So it may not be, you know, representation of me in that portrait, but it is, I think, emotionally and artistically, which is really cool. And I haven't experienced that level of connection to my art unless I'm doing a really large, expressive, abstract painting. I get that same sort of vibe, but in a portrait, it's almost like I have a plan when I sit down. Sometimes I have a photo reference of someone that I want to use as a model, but I truly just let the portrait come to life on paper. And oftentimes at the end, I kind of exhale because it's a process. And then I look at the reflection of what's looking back at me on the paper. And it's really neat to then sit and think, what's your story? What, you know, what's the emotion that I'm feeling from you? You know, what could your story be? And I think that's really exciting when it comes to portraits, especially if you're not creating portraits of someone specifically.
I was actually going to ask you that. Are you creating portraits based off a photograph or you know, somebody you know, or are they just coming from an idea, from a thought you have, and then wanting to create that portrait around that sort of thought or feeling?
Yeah, so I do both. And often when I'm using a photograph, I'm looking for, you know, how is the face lit? What type of shadows are there? What's the expression? What's the angle of the portrait? Is it something that's a little bit more challenging or interesting? So I'm looking for all of those things. Yeah, so I definitely have worked with photo references of people that I know, even famous people, which is always really fun because then that's a challenge for me to try to get their essence. I've worked with live models too. But the moments where I just sit down and I'll let myself just create a portrait at sort of, you know, from memory or just let the tools do its thing and I'm guided, it's really interesting because this may sound a little woo-woo, but sometimes I think, oh, is this someone that I knew from a past life? Is this some, because it's often, I'm often recreating a similar look or feel. So I don't know if it's maybe emulating something that's familiar to me with my own self. I don't do a lot of self-portrait. I think that's really, it's brave to be able to look at yourself and to create. And I'm actually going to challenge myself to do it more because I can use myself as, you know, I have literally something to model from, right? Just, you know, I can look in a mirror, I can take a photo, et cetera. But sometimes when we're trying to do a landscape, if we don't live by the mountains, where do we find the photo reference unless we go online? So I think that, you know, again, you're influenced by the people around you, your family, your friends, and it just becomes this really beautiful blending of whatever you experience and whoever you come across. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, how we often feel uncomfortable with the idea of self-portraiture because it's something I've explored photographically and I dislike it when I'm doing it, as in, or not even then, I dislike the idea of it because self-portraiture and I'm like, oh my goodness me, I don't need to see me. But then the thing about it is, and that the thing that always pushes me through when I've done it is you haven't had to tee up getting somebody to be your model. You haven't had to explain to them your idea. You haven't had to clothe them in a certain way or do any of those sorts of things because you can just have the idea and know exactly then what you need to do for the setup and then make it happen. Like, so it does give you an incredible amount of freedom. Like, it is difficult to do, don't get me wrong. But then the flip side of that is you get so much freedom because you're not having to explain to somebody why you want them standing in this weird way or looking like this or doing that because it's the idea you have in your mind and you're just creating it yourself. So there's no explanation needed. You're just doing it and exploring it. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, well, so be it. Who cares, right? Like you can just move on to the next idea. So yeah, it is a thing that I know a lot of people are uncomfortable with, but it is valuable in terms of, I suppose in a way too, the value is it then does allow you to explain to somebody if you want to sit down and create their portrait. It gives you the ability to, you know, what it feels like to be the one, whether it's photographed or painted or drawn or whatever. So it gives you a sort of a sense of, okay, I need to explain to them why I want them doing this because they might think I'm the weirdest person in the world otherwise. But I think it's incredibly valuable. Try it. Push yourself. Do it. It is uncomfortable, but it's also in a way really freeing. So
I think it's looking so closely at yourself. That's the tough part too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like
we have our own faces. We can use endless resource, you know, for references, but it also means we have to examine our faces. And I think that's something True. That I don't spend a lot of time doing. It's almost the opposite. It's like, if I don't look, I don't need to see.
True. But then what it gives you too is, and this is sort of kind of widely off topic, but it's, I guess in a way it's still, we're talking portraiture, is it allows you to then distort what you're creating without, how do I explain this? Okay, so if I think about the self-portraiture that I've done, as I said, it's been with a camera, so I realize that's different again. But if I've been feeling a particular way and have wanted to be able to create that feeling through that photograph, I can do whatever it is to make that happen and not have to think, oh, well, this person might look at this and think, like if I was using a model or a friend or whatever, they might look at it and think, why have you made me look this way? Mm-hmm. Whereas when I'm doing it on myself, well, that's because I'm trying to get that feeling expressed. So I don't care if I don't look real or realistic, mm-hmm. because that's not what I was trying to do. I wasn't trying to create realism. I was trying to create a feeling, you know, or a thought that I was having, an emotion.
But it's more artistic and expressive versus, trying to create specific portrait style.
Yeah, it is uncomfortable, but it is a worthwhile exercise. And you know, the beautiful thing about art is we don't have to share it with anyone. No one has to see it. So it doesn't even matter anyway. If you hate it, cool. No one has to know.
Yeah, exactly. And I think too, as you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, just having that freedom. You can create whatever expression you want using your own self as a reference. Because often I'll look online for photos and I want to be very respectful of copyright and making sure that I'm, you know, using people's photographs as reference, and I might bother you and see if I can dig into your files and see if I can use some of your photos. Note to self after the call. But again, I like the idea of maybe, you know, inspiring people to use their own photo or their own reflection as a reference and have some fun with it. And I think, mm-hmm. like you said, you don't have to show anyone what you're creating. And there's a bit of, you know, freedom and play in that. Because I think in this day and age, we're just so used to thinking like, well, I don't want to show anyone that. Well, you don't have to.
No, you don't.
I love that.
There's no rules to that. Yeah. And I think another thing, which is sort of slightly stepping away from portraiture per se, but the other thing that I've had fun, that I like to do with just a simple graphite pencil, is sketch my hand or sketch my feet or something, because they're there, right? They're right there.
Yeah.
And we all know how difficult it is to draw hands and make them look like hands and draw feet and make them look like proper feet. So that's mm-hmm. a fun thing to do too, is yes, you of course you can go online for references, but you've got your own body right there. So why not explore it? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And then even like, what kind of poses can I create with the hand, and what kind of expression, and, you know, what kind of feeling? And yeah, I love that.
Yep. And actually, while we're still on this subject, well, because, you know, why not? The other thing that I found when I first started playing with self-portraiture with the camera was shooting from behind. So, i.e. not having my face in it. I found that mm-hmm. easier to begin with, because then I wasn't looking at my face. I was looking at my body, and it's tricky to set up because obviously it required me to use the remote on my phone to control my camera, which meant I had to have, you know, a tripod and all that sort of stuff. But it allowed me to fall into doing it so much easier, because to begin with, I was only seeing my back. So the back of my head, the back of my body, that sort of thing. And then I found that a lot easier to then turn to have my face in front of the camera, because I was already used to, well, I've done my back, so why not get the actual expressions on my face that I needed? So seeing that we went there, I just thought I'd throw that out as well.
I love it. I just know how many takes I have to do when I'm doing selfies for like social media or something.
Oh, yeah,
so I can't even imagine that. With an actual DSLR. I'm like, oh my honestly, God, I have probably 80.
I am the worst selfie taker in the world.
Same.
Oh, gosh.
It's painful. I think just this week I deleted a whole, like, half a day's worth of trying to get some half-decent photos. So as you're talking about it, I'm like, oh, my God, I can't even imagine with the setup that you must have.
Oh, look, the beautiful thing about digital is we can delete. Love it, love it, love
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. And hopefully nothing stays in the cloud.
No, definitely not. So you did sort of touch briefly at the start on your actual online course. And I do want to sort of talk about that a bit because, you know, we might have some listeners who are curious, would like to try this, but don't feel comfortable trying on their own, you know, just grabbing their watercolors out and finding a reference or using themselves as a reference. So without getting into too much detail, obviously, you sort of take us through the steps of your course. Like if someone was to sign up for this tomorrow or, you know, on listening tomorrow, where would they be starting from and where hopefully would be their end point?
You know what? Let me give you a little bit of backstory too to why the course came about and even how I got to the point where I felt comfortable enough to put a course together, because I think that might be really helpful for some.
Yeah, so because I've seen it, because obviously, as I said, I follow you on Instagram, so I've sort of seen all that, but that's me assuming that the listeners know too. So you're right. Let's take it right back.
Yeah, just a couple of years, like not so, I would say maybe 5 to 6 years ago, I decided that it was time to really start to understand how to create a portrait and what that expression was going to look like. So that's when I decided to start investing in a few more classes myself and spent more time practicing. And I think what I ended up doing was too much. I did too many courses from different teachers using different mediums, and there was a bit of confusion. So I would say I probably stopped even trying to work on portraits for maybe a good year or so, because I would sit down and I wasn't successful because there were too many techniques in my head, too many instructions, too much variety of other people's approaches, and not enough time spent developing what Nikki's approach was going to be. And then I want to say it was 2022, I decided to try the 100 day challenge again. I've tried it before, wasn't ever really successful. I'd done, you know, a lettering 100 day challenge. And for those who don't know what the 100 day challenge is, I don't remember who started it, but it's an online sort of challenge, I guess it is, where you dedicate to doing something creative for 100 days in a row. And you do it on your own, but you share it within the community online if you want. You don't have to share it. But I always thought it would be great to be disciplined to be able to create that practice and that habit and to see where it would take me. So, you know, I had the best intention every year. I would try to, you know, do a sketch a day or a landscape a day. And I would always sort of fall off at day 30 or, you know, day 31, right? It never was really successful for me. But the year that I decided to really hone in on my portrait skills, I cut down 100 sheets of paper, and I used not only watercolor, I used some pastel paper, some old vintage paper. I just had a stack of 100 sheets cut down to maybe a 4x6. And I numbered each and every sheet. And then I had them in a box. And every day I would just pick the sheet. It was already, you know, it was already going to dictate what supplies I would use, whether it was charcoal, watercolor, pencil, you name it. And I would sit down and I would do a small portrait. And through that 100 days, because I made it very specific and simple and small, it was doable. I did not miss a day, even with travel. I, you know, would bring it with me, but I did not miss a day in 100 days. And that's when my style really developed, my confidence, you know, in terms of how I was approaching a portrait really developed, how I would shade it and express it. I had some days where I just went, whoa, that's crazy. And I can't believe that came out. And it's awful. Do you know what I mean? Or that's not something I really want to share online, but I tried to share every single day. And that habit allowed me to create a more simplified approach to how I would approach portraits. And then as soon as I started to refine that, I noticed each time I sat down to create a portrait, I was more and more successful. So then I started working larger, and I started, you know, really getting disciplined and creating very realistic drawings And then, you know, the next day I would allow myself to get a little bit more expressive. And it was through that continued practice that I think is when I went, I could teach this. I had people, you know, commenting, encouraging. It was so lovely. But then people would comment and say, wow, I want to do that. I want to be able to do that. And again, I think it's that, you know, human connection to emotion, to a personal story, a history that I think is so beautiful. And maybe you experience it too, Kim, when you do your photography and portraits, but to be able to capture that or express that is really unique. Again, I haven't had that same connection to my art as I have when I am sitting down and working on a portrait. It really is a beautiful experience. And even when the portrait doesn't turn out the way that you intended or anticipated, it's still, the end result is still a really cool experience.
Yeah, definitely. So then from there, that's how the course came about. Is it like, is it a course that is stepped over a certain amount of weeks? Is it time restricted? How does that work?
So I have released the entire course so that it can be consumed all at once. However, just knowing the process of portraits throughout the course, I actually tell the student, you know, so you've watched up till now, what I'd really love for you to do is to take a week and just practice what we've just covered. Like, don't hit play on the next lesson, because sometimes people will take a course and will sit and watch and not do. Yeah. And I think that's nice because that can be relaxing too. And that's a bit of a meditative process when you can, you know, witness another artist's process. And, but I think sometimes it's the doing that we don't do enough of. So I really try to encourage the journey. And when I plan a course, there is, like, I have a start and an end in mind. And then what happens through the process is, you know, what I'm hoping the student or the artist experiences in learning with me. And with portraits, although you get access to everything, I break down very strategically the way that I want to teach that step. So whether it's, you know, this is how you draw the eyes, the nose, and the mouth independently of being on a face, I then show them my practice pages and encourage them to, again, hit pause, don't move on to the next lesson, but to sit and to look for examples of eyes or features that they want to try and practice and draw before we move on to the next one. And then I've incorporated, I kind of have three approaches that I maybe rotate through when I am painting portraits or drawing portraits. And those are the three that I really focus on, because I don't believe that we all should use one approach. And I think just, you know, as a visual learner, I want to be able to have a little bit more examples, or be, you know, even be able to be a little bit more free with how I create portraits. But some people might need more structure and want the more technical, mathematical approach to breaking down a face. So I've given my three approaches that I think are my favorite and the most effective, and then encouraged and given permission throughout the course to just let whatever comes out on paper come out, but to make sure they take their time and to work on the practice.
Nice. I like it. Actually, I was going to ask you, what is your favorite size portrait to create? Like, you mentioned your 100 days were, I think you said that was 6x4, but like, what gives you the best amount of space to create a portrait?
Yeah. So I would say the, you know, the 4x6 size was a little bit small if I wanted to get in a lot of detail. Mm-hmm. I love to work in sketchbooks that are, like, I'm looking at the size of my hand. So portraits, when they become a little bit larger, like the face is larger than the size of your hand, they can start to look a little bit odd. Because when you think about it, our faces are pretty much the size of our hands, right?
Yeah.
So anything that's maybe like an 8x8 square, or even an 8.5 or an 8x10, I don't know what a because I know you use A2, A4. I don't know what sizes those are.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So I think that size is doable in terms of the amount of time that I sit down at a painting or at a drawing. It's, you know, I like to spend a few hours if I'm doing something that's a little bit more detailed and if I'm bringing in drawing and painting. So that size allows me to create some really nice detail because it's large enough to be able to add detail, but it's also a great size to be able to finish in one go.
Mm-hmm.
I may tweak, like there's a few that I've just actually picked up and I may tweak a little bit and look back now that I've kind of taken a bit of space from them. But I really like that. Like an 8x8 or an 8x10, I think is a really comfortable size.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, it would be remiss of me to not ask what watercolors are you using and what paintbrushes are you using? I know the answer, but not everybody knows the answer to the question. So I'm going to ask.
Well, we all have our favorites for different reasons, right?
Yeah.
For sure. And it's art supplies.
Yes, exactly.
Listen, I'm not, you have to use this product. You have to use this color. Like I truly believe find what you have available.
Absolutely.
Use what you, right? Like spend within your means. Buy the best quality paint that you can. I think I can make different paperwork. It may frustrate me, but I can make different paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
Brushes would probably be the next one that I can kind of make work if I wasn't using really good quality. And you don't have to go out and spend a lot of money on, you know, real hair brushes. I don't think we need to in this day and age. Synthetic brushes are made so beautifully now that they hold a lot of watercolor, a lot of paint. You can have a great painting experience with them. But pigment for me has to be number one priority. If you have a little bit more money to spend, get a professional quality paint. So I've used, you know, a lot of brands. Watercolor, I think primarily they're all created very similarly, but it's the amount of pigment ratio in the paint that makes a difference. So I love Winsor & Newton Professional. I love them so much that I've actually started working with them and I'm a demo artist with them now. They've been a huge support of my book, of my art, getting to know people, you know, throughout Winsor & Newton. They're all very passionate about what they do, about their product and artists. So it makes me love them even more, even though I would use their paints regardless. But I can depend on the quality and the reliability. And especially if you're selling your art, you want to make sure that the pigment will last, that, you know, it's going to be there for a long time and they'll be really brilliant still. With acrylic, I think you can get away with maybe sometimes using a lower quality paint because of the nature of the paint, you know, with a bit of varnish, you know that it's good to go. It should last for a very long time, at least for our lifetime. Mm-hmm. With watercolor, because it's a water-based medium, I do spray varnish my pieces, but being water-based on paper, it's just a little bit more volatile. So I want to make sure that I have a really good quality pigment that I start with.
Mm-hmm.
And then brushes, again, synthetic. I get my own set that I've designed and manufacture overseas. They do a really beautiful quality synthetic sort of Japanese style brush hair. And again, it's just looking for brushes that pick up a lot of water that are specifically for watercolor and don't use them with any other medium. You want to really protect them and baby them so that they work really well with the water-based medium.
Fantastic. So before we wrap, is there anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, I think just, you know, encourage those listening who maybe have an interest in expressing, you know, portraits and their art to just give yourself permission to try, you know, maybe trace out features, use a photo reference, get down an initial drawing and play around with color and, you know, where you would lay shadows in that. And even really just enjoy the emotional connection to the portrait and, you know, maybe the expression that you're working on, the emotion behind that expression, and have fun. And if it doesn't work out, you don't have to show anyone. Like you said, mm-hmm. I love that.
I think it's just important to keep in mind, you know, like a lot of people, when we're making art, we're not making it to share it, but then it's that thing that we just all do now, right? Like we all like to share, which is fine because, of course,
the nature,
especially when you're super proud of something, you want to show it and say, hey, look at this thing I did. Even if you're not selling what you're creating, and you still want to show people and, you know, say, look, I'm so proud of this. This is a thing I did. But you don't have to. So if you dislike something intensely, that's fine. Nobody needs to know it exists.
And you know what? It's funny you say that because I was just chatting with someone recently around sketchbooks. And because, you know, it's the nature of our day-to-day now with social media, everything is so polished and so refined that even myself, when I'm sitting down and working a sketchbook, I feel like the pressure of every page needs to be beautiful and sort of Instagram worthy, and it's not. And I think in my courses, I actually keep drawings or paintings sometimes that don't necessarily work out as planned to show people that this is the reality.
Oh.
Every time you sit down to paint, it's not going to be a beautiful rendition of, you know, whatever it is that you're emulating. And, you know, even like I said, with sketchbooks, it's okay if some of the pages are ugly and, you know, maybe they don't go or you don't. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. That's the process. We all go through that. That happens to everybody, guaranteed.
Absolutely. And I know for a fact that I've looked back on sketchbooks and thought, when I thought at the time something was, I was disappointed in it, in the outcome. And then I've looked back and I've gone, oh, that's actually nowhere near as bad as I remember. And I actually like that. Like, you know, I think we can be so hard on ourselves, especially if we think it should be at this certain level and we're not there yet. But, you know, we're learning and we're exploring, and that's what a sketchbook really is for, is for creating and practicing and experimenting and, you know, just throwing different ideas down and seeing what works. And even if you don't like something on the sketchbook page, the beautiful thing is you can turn it over and you have a brand new page to work on. So it's fine. Let it go. It's okay.
You know what? I think our next episode should be sketchbook practice.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
That would be fun. Yeah, that's a good idea. If you have me back.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. Yes, I do love repeat guests. It's fun.
Thank you, our chats.
So much for joining me. This is great. I love these conversations. And I really appreciate you taking some time out of your Canadian evening to join me.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Would you be interested in making a one-off payment to support us? In return, you'd be helping to keep the podcast going and would also get access to our bonus episodes. Let me know what you think via Kim@artsupplyposse.com or via Instagram.